Welcome, welcome, welcome to another edition of Smart Talk. I'm your host this week, Al Bergeson, and my guest is John McNeil, an academic advisor out at the U of A, and we're going to talk about how to navigate a college degree. The reason we're doing that is August 26th. That's the Monday after this coming Monday. U of A starts, and for you parents listening, it's a great time to jump in and ask John some questions about signing up for classes, changing classes. How do you pick a major? What kind of majors? Do some things matter for business? More or less, da-da, da-da, da-da. And if you're a student, by some reason, happen to be listening to us, please call in and either complain about the advisors you've had, ask new questions. If you're just in high school and want to find out about college, call in. So, you know, John, as I started thinking about your job as a college advisor about courses and degrees and majors, I'm going to ask you the full range of stuff that you okay. do. Do you even do personal stuff, personal advice? Or what do you do when someone comes in and says, I'm having trouble with my boyfriend and et cetera, et cetera? But when I went to college, not that it's a million years ago, but I don't think there were any advisors. Actually, I can't remember. Somehow I remember signing up in graduate school. I remember the clearest. You'd pick out a program, and then you'd go into the gym, and there'd be these long picnic tables with millions of people and these stacks of stuff, and you'd wait in line in front of each person. So 10, 15 minutes, I'd get there, I'd give them the program I wanted, and they'd thumb through this book, sociology 550, that's filled. And so what else do you want to do? And I'd have some backups. Okay, you can do that. How about 11 o'clock won't work? And basically, you worked it out right then yourself. And
right
it was
at the registration table, yeah.
Right at the registration table. And now at some schools, tell me if this happens at the U of A, you get this option of like a two-week trial period. I think Stanford does this. They go at the little things, may not quite know what they want or the course. Actually, I shouldn't say little things. It's actually a reasonable thing. But they get 2 weeks without penalty to change. It's not what I thought it would be. Do we do things like that here at the U of A?
Yeah. Actually, students can, they'll sign up for courses. They start their classes. Then usually within the first 2 weeks, if a student makes a change, drops a class, it doesn't stay on their record. There are deadlines where after a certain point in the semester, if you're still in it and you drop the class, you get marked with a W, which stands for a withdrawal. So that stays on your record. But the first 2 weeks or so,
it's free.
You can drop it. It won't be on your record. So no one will know that you tried to take Social 101 and decided it wasn't for you or whatever, or you tried to take a business class and it just didn't work out and you dropped it early. So let's
start at the beginning. And okay. let's take me, I'll be Al the undergraduate. And I know August 26th is coming Monday, is the start of class. Mm-hmm. And so will I have been told ahead of time that I must see an advisor, or is it an option? What is it?
So that's a good question, because a lot of it depends on what level Al, the undergraduate, is. If you're a freshman,
you're an
incoming freshman, you've gone through orientation, you've met your advisor, you've at least once, so you've worked with them to build a schedule before school starts, and most advisors will tell students, come talk to me the first week or the first 2 weeks in that drop deadline where you can get rid of a course, just to make sure that, you know, things are going the way you anticipated and that they're going the way you want them to go. And so, yes, they've been told, go see your advisor. And they do that at orientation. So, you know, we spend the month of June doing freshman orientations all through June, though we do have actually an orientation coming up next week for the very, you know, the students who
missed
or, yeah, whatever reason they couldn't come in June. So we do have one next week, a freshman orientation. So
they don't get to pick their advisor, I would guess.
No, it's undergraduate advisors are based on the major the student chooses. So
it's really hard, although maybe they do know these days, to know what you want to be when you just start out. And you might think, this is neat. I know for sociology, a lot of students don't even know what it means. Psychology, yeah, that's your personality, your mind, you know, you're a right. nut or you're really neat. I get that. Economic, yeah, business, I get that. Or Eller, it's a business school. Do you often talk to them about what these majors mean? Or today's kid, are they clear on what they want? Are they, I don't know, I'm just going to college. You help me.
Well, let's put it this way. I start most conversations with students by going, I don't know is a perfectly good answer to this question, but what do you want to do? Where do you want to go with this? What's the plan? And you know, you find with freshmen to seniors, I don't know is a very popular answer because they don't.
And what do you say? Okay, let's role play it.
Okay. All right.
I don't know. Hi, I'm Al.
Hi, Al. How are you? Let's talk about where you want to go with this. And I don't know is a perfectly good answer, but, you know.
I don't know.
Okay. Well, what are your areas of interest? What do you want to do? What do you like doing? What did you like doing in high school?
Oh, you know, we used to go up and down Speedway and, you know, see the guys. And I don't know.
Well,
I'm being deliberately tough.
right.
Trying to test for you.
Well, you know, one of the things is that you do talk to them. You try to get to know the students. You try to pull out information from them about what their areas of interest were. I'll give you an example. I had a student come in. He was basically told he should major in sociology because it was a good fit for his athletic schedule. And he clearly didn't want to major in sociology. So I said, what are you actually interested in? And he's like, I'm interested in music and the production of music. And I said, well, why aren't you talking to the advisors in the music department? And there is a production program. And he said, well, I was basically told this will work with my schedule that, you know, for sports and, you know, I got to do these things. And I said, okay, well then let's talk about minoring in music. Let's call up the advisors in music and talk to them about the, and suddenly his whole attitude changed because it's like, wait, you mean you can still help me try to find something I'm really interested in and all of these things. And I'm like, it's a big university. There are lots of opportunities. So whether it's a minor, which is just, you know, most majors, you know, at least in the College of Social and Behavioral Sciences, most majors require a student to have a minor, which is a sort of secondary field of study, you know, or whether it's a student decides to pick up a second major or pursue 2 degrees, you know, there are lots of opportunities. So that's why we're always like, go talk to your advisor, because the advisor knows how to navigate the system. College is a giant bureaucracy, and it's hard to navigate. And so you need that person who can say, okay, we're going to talk to these.
You know, it's not just navigation. There's an old saying, and it's so true, that you need an advocate in a hospital.
Right.
You just yourself, you know, whatever. You're either lost or you're older or you on meds somehow, but you need someone to push all the time. And an advisor sounds like someone who does the same thing for you. And full disclosure, John is the academic advisor assigned to the School of Sociology, which has two degrees, one in sociology and the other one in care, health, and society. I would imagine that if it's like football or basketball, they have practice like from whatever, 2 to 5,
right,
or something. And so that class, they would prefer for you to be on the field, that you're not taking courses. And so they move you to recommend that you, and that's where the guy
right,
came
right.
with
that
sociology.
That was the situation, which the, you know, some majors have more flexibility in when their courses are offered, so they just fit certain schedules better, you know, or maybe they offer more classes online or things like that. And so if you have, what you find at the U of A is there are some majors that are extremely structured, where you're, you know, I have to do class A before class B, before class C. And then there are other majors that have a lot more flexibility. Sociology is a great one for that. It's 2/3 of the major are really up to the student. They get to sort of pick the areas of interest, the times of interest. So you know, some majors work better with a schedule. You know, people forget student athletes, they're on a pretty heavy duty scheduled life. There, you know, there's travel, there's practice there. So, you know, sometimes they have to, you know, work, keep that in mind when we're picking what they can do. So,
you know, there was a time when I think there wasn't majors. I think the modern version goes back to the 1890s at Johns Hopkins University in Baltimore. And it used to be very general. It was like a school of divinity, like early Harvard and Yale and Princeton, a school of divinity and maybe a couple of things that are very broad, or business,
liberal arts,
very broad,
right.
Liberal arts, at a very broad degree. And as the professors began to specialize in disciplines, the unit of the university was less these broad things, but more narrow, specific things. Psychology department, sociology department. And now you get degrees, not just in biology, or cellular biology, or small plant cellular biology, or the first twig on a small plant in a cellular biology, et cetera, et cetera. When you talk to today's young people and they come in and you listen to them and whatnot, do you think that the major thing, rather than being an advantage, is perhaps a disadvantage, and we should just go back to, I don't know, what is it, 120 units?
Right.
Anything you want, maybe with required that you try a little math, a little this, or whatever, whatever, but that we don't force you to pick a major.
Well, I think that for some students, the clarity of a major and the direction are exactly what they need. You know, you get a lot of students who come in knowing, yeah, this is the direction I want to go, and this is the way to my career. What they find, though, over time is that there are a lot of pathways to careers. And so, you know, they may get in there and as they're taking their general education courses, stumble upon a field of study that they didn't realize was out there. And that's how sociology generally gets found. You know, a student takes a random course for their
education. They like the professor.
They like the professor. They like the topic. I didn't know anyone was even talking about this stuff. You know, things that they had seen out in the world and suddenly went, you mean I can take a class that talks about social issues? I can take a class that talks about poverty in Tucson?
I'm here with John McNeil, academic advisor in the School of Sociology at the University of Arizona, 790-2040. That's the call-in number. Give us a call. Ask John as a student or a parent about what advising is all about and what John will help your child or help you with. A little backdrop, John. What got you interested in advising as a career?
That actually happened. It was a long-term sort of thing. As an undergraduate, I worked as a tutor, and I really liked working with fellow students. And then my first professional job on the campus was working with a tutoring program, coordinating it. And then eventually I wanted to sort of expand and get out there working sort of on helping, not just, you know, with tutoring, you were working with students on a specific problem or a specific subject area. And I really wanted to help students sort of find a way to navigate this crazy place that is the university. And that's how I went to advising.
We're going to take a break, pay some of the bills with a little advertising, and so stick with us. We're going to ask John McNeil, academic advisor at the U of A, about the biggest problems he runs in with students. Smart Talk with your host, Al Bergeson, here with John McNeil, academic advisor at the U of A for College of Social and Behavioral Sciences, assigned specifically to the School of Sociology, which has two degrees, one in sociology proper, the other one in care, health, and society. John, during the break, I began to think, you've obviously done this for how many years?
I've been an advisor for 10 years.
Wow, 10 years. So you've seen a million kids. Okay, I exaggerate, 500,000. But you've seen a lot of kids. Are there some common questions or stumbling blocks that seem to come up over and over again?
Well, with the students in the School of Sociology, the most common question is, what job can I get with this? Where can I take this? And the tough but true answer is, you know, you can, the sky's the limit. You can really take this degree in any direction you want. You pair it with the right minor and you can go towards, human resources. You pair it with another, you could go into sales. We have a former sociology major who's actually in med school now. So you can take some of these degrees, you can take them in a lot of different directions. I always tell students that, divorce from your mind the idea that major equates to job. I mean, that's true in some cases, but in most of the work world, it's major equates to skill sets, and those skill sets open the door to a wide variety of jobs.
Or even a little more bottom line, major involves a Bachelor of Arts or that you're a college graduate, and that...
Right, we know...
Is what gets you the jobs. There are very few majors, I think, that a BA, Bachelor of Arts, or BS, Bachelor of Science, BS, give me other things too, but it's Bachelor of Science, can actually get you a job. The others, you mostly are a college graduate. They might look at it, but it may or may not matter.
Right, and we know that, we know that with a bachelor's degree, you're going to earn more over your lifetime. So it's not always about having a specific degree. It's about, yes, did I graduate? Do I have the sort of critical thinking skills? And that's what students sort of, need to know. Some of it is about getting the skills that are going to make you employable. And it's not, do I remember all of these theories from my psychology or sociology or political science class? It's, do I know how to collect information from a bunch of sources? Do I know how to sort of move through that information and make logical sense of it? So,
The more I think about it, if students come in and they say, I want something tied to getting a job, maybe we should make everything the Eller College. I know the Eller listeners are going to love that.
They got a lot of students.
But I mean, the bottom line here is, if in point of fact, college today isn't, quote, so much, at least in the point of view of students coming in, I want broad knowledge to be a better citizen. I'm just curious about Sanskrit language. I just want to play a trumpet, but rather I want a job. Should we just turn college into vocational school?
Well, no, because one, especially with something like the University of Arizona, which is the land grant institution for the state of Arizona, the mission is we are making, well-rounded, educated citizens of not just the state of Arizona, but of the world, of the U.S. and the world in general. So, we have a larger obligation to not just a job, but, a role or a place in society down the road. Not to mention, then you would be missing out on a diversity of skill sets that can come from studying different areas. If you had everybody just studying, sort of a business curriculum, that's great. But, how do I work in a very different sort of entrepreneurial setting, or how do I, where's the innovation coming from? If we only have one point of view, then you're going to lose innovation. So,
And following up on that, I suppose to the extent that, the United States is becoming ever more diverse. Having people understand race, relations, class, a lot of the social categories that we can be divided on or united on is as important as sheer economic skill sets.
Sure.
I know that popularity of majors rise and fall.
Mm-hmm.
Step back a second and think about the past 10 years. What have you seen broadly across the university or within the College of Social and Behavioral Sciences in terms of the popularity of some majors rising, some majors declining, some staying the same? And why do you think they rise, decline, or stay the same?
Well, a lot of it goes to, what you brought up earlier about, we've got these more and more specialized majors out there. So, students can sort of really sort of narrow their field of study sometimes. And that let's take sociology. It's a very broad field of study. And that can, when you're competing with more narrowly defined. You know, sometimes students go, "Oh, well, that's exactly the major I want," and so they'll sort of move away from the broadly defined stuff. But I think that then you have these cycles where eventually people come back to, "Hey, you know, I like the political science or the psychology or the sociology, the sort of over the umbrella sort of field," and go that route. But yeah, right now you see everything's in flux, and you know we live in an age of data and metrics, and so you know you're constantly being told, "Oh, your numbers are up or your numbers are down," and it's like, okay, well, how do we deal with that? And part of it is it's a long-term game. You know, educating the populace is a long-term thing, not a And that there's room for, you know, specialization and generalization. So,
if it's true that robotization is only increasing, the notion of going to college for jobs only may be a bit hollow, because there may not be any jobs, or the jobs change. And so, ironically, it may be that a quote classical education of rhetoric, just learning how to articulate thoughts or have reasoned thoughts or be able to grasp a lot of things or think in value terms. What's the right thing? What's the moral thing? Mm-hmm. Because the A to B mechanical thing is now done by Tommy the robot down the street, putting things together. And you're sitting there, and if the little needle gets too hot, you tone it down. Or if it gets too cold, you tone it back up. But basically, you don't need a college degree to know that when the needle goes to red, you got to turn the button. And when the needle goes to green, you got to turn the button the other way. So it would be an irony, wouldn't it, that you'd gone from a classical education of conversation, Socratic dialogue, ruled out that you need subject matter, specific disciplines, you know, scientific knowledge that's discovered. And now you go full circle, and now we're back to, so John, what do you think? That's interesting. I think a little differently. Well, Al, tell me about that. And then, you know, we go back and forth. You see any signs of something like that? Or what's your thoughts on that?
Not yet, thankfully. I think that, you know, the automation is definitely hitting the service industry a lot. But I think, you know, hopefully we've got a little bit of ways to go before it starts hitting some of the other areas. But I don't know if it'll drive people back to a more general or you know, turn everyone into philosophy majors, you know, contemplating their existence in a world of automation. That would be an interesting approach. I have to laugh because I was talking to one of the faculty advisors in the philosophy department.
Yes.
Not long ago, and she was bemoaning the fact that, you know, that there's always these you know, articles about, you know, philosophy and how, you know, oh, majors that you should stay away from and how it's, you know, not as relevant. And I'm like, you know, it's the root of all questioning. Philosophy is the root of all critical thinking. How is that not relevant, especially in these days?
What did she say?
She thought that was hysterical. She said, "Well, everyone's paying attention to STEM," and I said, "Forget the STEM. This is the root of it all."
Absolutely. I often thought that history majors, it was sometimes dismissed as about the ancient past, and uh-huh. You know, who cares about medieval history with Rollo the Dangler? He was so called that because his feet were so long on these small horses that they dragged along on, or who happens in the year 10,000, whatever. That, in fact, history, in that you have to read a whole bunch of books, is actually the perfect pre-law major. That many times people want to be a political science major because law and government. Sure. But actually what you do is go through a million cases and
right.
What other major makes you read a million books but a history major? Quick question. Uh-huh. Do you know what the most popular major for women undergraduates at Stanford is today?
I don't know.
Computer science.
That's great.
And it's partly, I'm sure, shallow alto, as the undergraduates call it, meaning everyone wants to be a startup king, everyone wants to have their own Google, everyone wants to do this. And so learning how to code, you know, so you can Mark Zuckerberg and start your own. Is there any kind of push you see here to prime college kids with these computer-laden skill sets as a required thing?
Not so much as a required thing, but I mean, I do, you know, I mean, technology, STEM fields, they're growing, they're very popular with undergraduates, so that's good. We need diverse minds looking at the problems of technology. So that's excellent, and that's interesting to know. I did not know that Stanford had that situation. That's great. But I think the interesting thing is, you know, if you're looking at sort of the popularity of fields, obviously, especially in Arizona and in Southern Arizona, healthcare, anything related to healthcare is extremely popular. From, you know, the student who goes, I want to go to med school, to the student who's like, oh, I want to be a nurse, to, you know, I've had students who are like, I want to get a bachelor's degree, even though I actually am interested in going and later getting a technical degree to be, you know, an ultrasound tech or an x-ray tech. But they know that the bachelor's degree will help them in the future when they want to get, you know, advancement in their careers. So you see it. But then, you know, we also see students who are interested in, you know, the hospitals are chock full of people who aren't nurses and doctors, you know, that are still making the hospital run. And so we see students who are interested in hospital administration, patient rights, patient advocacy, things like that. So
it is interesting over time how much more students would have an interest. I could not imagine going in and someone said, well, what do you want to be, Alan? I'd say, I want to be a hospital administrator, or I'm interested in patient rights to, you know, and is there a major for that? I mean, right. the preloading of aspiration and the preloading of specific jobs is both good, I suppose, although how old are you when you start college?
Usually 18.
So at 18, that you know what you want to be seems a little crazy. Even in graduate school, they show up now and they want to study this or they want to study that instead of finding out, you know, the full range of things and picking something from that. But I guess that's just the nature of the world. All right, we got to take a break. We will be back with, excuse me, John McNeil, academic advisor at the U of A. Smart Talk, I'm your host, Al Bergeson. We're here with John McNeil, academic advisor in the College of Social and Behavioral Sciences. We're talking about what advisors do. If you're a student, give us a call. If you're a parent who's got a student going to college, or you're just curious about what advisors do and what majors today's students are interested, give us a jingle, 790-2040. John's working the board, and he will direct your name to me, and we'll put you right on the air. You know, John, before we left, we were talking about general and specific kinds of things, whether the whole college thing should go back to a kind of classic thing where nothing specific, or whether it should get ever more refined into, you know, I want to do oiling the left arm of a robot on a Chevrolet assembly line, whether that's a major in the future. You said you had a great story about a student and his choice, her choice of majors.
Well, we were talking about, you know, students and how sort of the decisions they make and coming in with ideas about a job. And it brought to mind a student who his freshman year he came in and he said, you know, I'm going to major in sociology, but I want to go into law enforcement. So we worked on that first year on his general education requirements, and then he progressed through freshman year, did great, came back after summer and said, okay, I don't want to go into law enforcement anymore. I want to become a teacher. And I said, okay, what happened? And he said he went on a couple of ride-alongs and suddenly realized law enforcement wasn't for him. So we started building a plan going to the future, and he was leaning towards education, started picked a minor that was relevant. after sophomore year, coming back into junior year, he said, "I don't want to be a teacher anymore." I said, "What happened?" And he said, "Well, I worked with some teachers at a summer camp over this last summer, and you know, I got to talking to them and suddenly realized, yeah, this isn't where I want to be either." I said, "Okay, do you have an idea where you want to go now?" And he said, "No, I have no idea." And I said, "Okay, well, we'll just keep working towards graduation then." And when he graduated, he actually went into social services. He was working for a counseling organization. And about a year after he had graduated, he was doing really well at a job. He actually was one of the lucky students, you know, got a gig right out of college and was pretty happy and making money. He shows up on my doorstep at the U of A and says, "Don't get me wrong, I like having a job, but I think there's more to what I want to do." And so we talked about some opportunities, and he found a nonprofit organization that he liked, and he went to work for them. And they gave him an opportunity to travel overseas and look at their projects that they were doing overseas. And so about 2 years pass, he shows up on my doorstep and said, "Hey, I've gone overseas. I've seen this nonprofit stuff. I've worked with these charity organizations. I need a master's degree. Help me find the perfect master's degree." And so we did. We sat down and we looked through all of the master's degrees the U of A offered, and we found a really good one for him. And he managed to, you know, he applied and he managed to get in, and he did fantastic. And 2 years later, he had his master's degree. But so it really, you know, we're all works in progress, right? We're constantly evolving and changing our outlook on what we want to do. And, you know, a lot of times students are afraid, you know, they're like, "No, this is what I have to do and I've got to stick with it." And okay, but you know, part of this is to critical think, not just about the world, but about yourself. And so you're evolving as you go.
Do your people skills, sounds like it, your people skills and compassion grow, have that over the years, facing these people almost not quite as a therapist or a counselor, or maybe even a parent, since you are older than they are. But listening to you now, it seems like there's a lot of psychology involved in this job.
Yeah, there's a desire to get to know and make sure that you're doing everything you can that's in the best interest of the student. And in doing that, you've got to get to know them. Now, advisor caseloads can get pretty big, and so I'm not going to guarantee that your advisor, if you're an undergraduate out there, I'm not going to guarantee that your advisor knows you as you know, super well, but I'm always telling my students, come see me. Tell me what you're interested in. Tell me the things that you want to do, because that's how we get the best plan of action for you, the best courses and things like that. I had a non-traditional student, so a student who didn't come in at 18. He came in at 60 and did his undergraduate, 60 to 64. And he would come every semester and sit down and talk to me about his classes, you know. And there's this idea that advising is, oh, I go to my advisor and just pick classes, and that's all we ever do. And he would come in and talk about classes, but he would come in and talk about classes because he felt like I had gotten to know him well enough to make suggestions based on, you know, him, as opposed to, oh, we need more bodies in this class, so I'm going to push this class, which is not what we do. We're really trying to, you know, if your area of interest is social problems, social inequality, well, then I'm going to recommend those teachers, those instructors, that's their specialty, and that's their, you know, we're going to talk about what you want to do and where you want to go. So yeah, I think over time, my skills have gotten better, I hope, more refined. I hope my students think that.
Well, it definitely sounds like it. You know, I'm thinking that I want to do this, I want to do that. I'm not sure. Do you ever get tempted to do a hard love thing? And here's what I'm thinking. I know with friends who I've gotten to know, when they get into something and I'm, whatever, a little frustrated, I'll kind of go, damn it, you got to pick something, or you gotta, don't, you know, I get a little, you know, forceful. Does that ever cross your mind as you listen to someone jumping every semester to a different thing, or are you either constrained by the job or, no, Al, I can't yell at the student. No, Al, this is not just my friend. This is a professional thing. And
right.
He wants to change. Okay. Change again. Okay. Change again. Okay. You ever go, no, you've got to pick something and stick with it.
A lot of times, I'm a storyteller, so I'm going to tell another story.
All right.
I had a senior. We were getting ready for her senior year. We were talking about things that she needed to do for her senior year. And she stopped and said, I miss when it was we. And I said, what do you mean? And she said, when I was a freshman, when I was a sophomore, it was always, well, we'll look into this, we'll do that. She goes, but I noticed last year and now this year, it's a lot of, okay, I'm going to do this. I'm going to fill out this paperwork to move forward with graduation. You're going to need to do this. You're going to need to fill that out. You're going to need to, she said, I miss when it was we, because it's now a lot of I or you, or, and I didn't realize that my language had changed over time with her, going from this sort of, we're in this together, to, okay, now you have some responsibilities that you need to put on. And so you can do some of that in a very soft and nurturing way. Yes, you've got to start, narrowing things down, because we graduation's a year away. You've got to pick something, because and talking about, how they make those decisions, and understanding that, they're still going to be evolving after they graduate.
Do you ever feel like an empty nest parent, or seeing your children, you're happy that they're leaving home, but you kind of miss them?
Sure. There's definitely, students that you miss, that you get to know over time, and you want to see them succeed and get out there. You want to see all your students succeed, but there are students that you get to know better than others. And so, occasionally you get an email from a student who are like, I don't know if you remember me. And it's like, no, I remember you. I remember this. It does. Luckily, I am a parent. I have a student who will be going to college soon. So, but yeah, you do get this sort of sense. I have a shelf in my office that's full of cards and thank yous and things like that. And so, when the job is tough and you're like, wait, why am I doing this again? And you're frustrated about stuff, you turn around and go, oh yeah, that's why I do it.
It's a great reminder of what you're doing. Let's take a minute and think about some advice you might have for different categories of people with school starting.
Sure.
And if it's not just for this particular starting for the U of A, could be going to high school or even to junior high, just as an advisor, or transitions for young people. You've been through a lot of these, So for the parents out there, what kinds of conversations would you tell them to have with their kids about going to the University of Arizona in terms of preparation and what to look forward to, not to, what not to be afraid of, et cetera.
Sure. Well, I mean, if we're talking about parents with middle school, high school students, get on the university websites with your student. Look around at their programs. Most universities have some sort of program about, give me information about this major, give me information about that major. Sit down with them and navigate with them. Look at where they're interested. Look at, what they think are majors that would be of interest to them. And so, yeah, sit down with them, kind of go through. There's a lot of information on those websites. Not every university's website is created equally, so you may have to hunt around more. But get in there and then don't be afraid to reach out to the admissions offices and things like that, and ask questions about, how do you get a hold of somebody in, say, sociology or political science or, the business school, and ask some questions.
We're going to take a break. Stick with us. We're going to ask John what advice would he have for incoming freshmen. So you students listening, keep your ears open. We're back. Smart Talk. I'm your host, Al Bergeson. Our guest today has been John McNeil, academic advisor at the University of Arizona. And we've been talking about what things to talk to your kids about, or if you're the kids, I want to turn to that, not kids, my God, I'm showing my own age. If you're starting the U of A as a freshman, John, what kinds of things should they have in mind from an advising point of view?
A couple things. First, go ahead and go into your student portal. Look at
student portal. Decode, please.
So every student has you know, every university usually has some sort of system where students can log in, look at their own account, look at what classes they're registered for, check out their own. Students have access to advising reports that show how much progress they've made. Now, a freshman, you're just starting out, so there's not a lot of progress being made. But it will tell you what classes you're signed up for. Make sure that those are the classes you remember signing up for at orientation. Make sure that you have your textbooks or the reading materials that the classes require. So go into your student portal, look those things up. And then if you're here in town, take a day, come to campus, walk your schedule, know what buildings your classes are in. So you're not trying to do that the first week of school, sort of running late, lost, take some time to walk your schedule and then reach out to your academic advisor. Every advisor is different on the kind of schedule they have. Advisors usually have some combination of appointments that you can schedule. There's a calendaring system, or you may have to call in to make the appointment, however they do that. And then what we call walk-ins, which are just, first come, first serve, drop-in advising. So check your advisor's schedule. Find out what kind of schedule they're going to have that first week of school. So if you do sit down in a class and go, oh, this is not what I was expecting, You can go and talk to that advocate, that person to help you out.
Students in mid-degree, that is somewhere between freshman and senior, thoughts for them?
Those students, they registered for their classes, last year, right? And now this is all summer gone by. Reach out to your advisor, sit down with them, make sure that the classes that they, did you make changes over summer that you didn't tell your advisor about? Make an appointment, sit down, talk to your advisor, talk to your faculty, reach out to your faculty that you're going to be taking classes this semester, and introduce yourself, or do that at least during the first day of school. Introduce, make sure you're going to office hours. You as a faculty member, you have to have office hours. And how frequently do you get bodies showing up in your office hours, Al?
Not very often. I do think there are two great things that you said that really hit me just as an adult out in the real world. And the first one is the walkthrough. Mm-hmm. I know when I have meetings or appointments, I often get there early, go in, see the room. I mean, people don't think you do, but you do. You go see the room where you're going to give a talk. You where's the nearest bathroom? All these kinds of things. You can't believe it, but people actually do. And those same skill sets work when you're starting out in college. The other thing is, and this is the fear thing students have, and understandably so, about going in to see a professor and to tell them they're going to be in the class and they're going to want to get to know you, or at least introduce themselves to you. So please do it. Students have said, it was a great class. And you'd say, well, thank you. And they'd say, well, I didn't want to do it. I thought you'd think I was just buttering up. And I always tell them, faculty don't get enough thank you for what they do. They love it. They are just human beings. They do not think the cynical side. They love strokes. So you can never go wrong thanking anyone or random acts of kindness anywhere and everywhere.
I actually make it a habit. If a student tells me in a meeting, I really loved this instructor, I really loved this class, I try to let the instructor know. I tell the student, please email them, let them know that they never, they're not getting all of this praise that they deserve. So, but I also let the faculty member, hey, a student just got done telling me they really liked your sociology of gender course last semester. They thought it was a blast, things like that. Because, yeah, you know, it's important to hear that, you know, you are reaching the students. So
yeah, here's a question. It just hit me listening to you, and I bet this one doesn't come up very often. What advice would you have for faculty about students? That is, we're always talking about what the students should do to adjust to the professors. What would you tell professors, or tell them right now, they should do, be aware of, sensitive to?
You know, keep in mind that the students are just like they are, very complex individuals that have a lot of stuff going on in their lives. So, you know, really think about the student. If their behavior is changing, you know, try to figure out why. You know, I'll give you a good example. I've had a case where, you know, a student was doing really well, but then something, you know, came up in their personal life, and suddenly they were missing class, and the faculty member came to me and said, "Now, without, you know, breaking any rules, can you tell me what's going on? Because, you know, the student went from not missing a class to suddenly over the, you know, last 2 weeks missing class all the time." And I was able to only give a little bit of information, but I said, I recommend you reach out to the student and let them know that you're concerned. And so they did. They emailed the student, said, "Hey, I haven't seen you in class. I want to touch base. I want to make sure everything's good." And the student's email response to their faculty member was priceless. The student said, "Wow, I didn't even think you knew who I was. And thank you so much for your concern." The student told them what was going on, and you know, and they were able to sort of work out, okay, you know, you missed an assignment. Let's talk about, you know, how we fix this and move forward. And so it was that simple email from the faculty member saying, "Hey, I'm concerned. I noticed you haven't been in class." So, you know, if you're noticing things, talk to the student, talk to the advisor that's embedded in your unit, you know, and try to get information.
You know, it's complex today, though. The walls and barriers between students' private life, between information about them that you can and can't give to their parents, even.
Right, FERPA.
So if someone, whatever, and you go in, you could also, or faculty could have a fear that if I ask about that, I've violated, you know, some rules. So there's a world of change going on.
Yeah.
That's also made it difficult. It is true that the U of A is a large state university, and this goes for many large state universities. And so the class sizes are, unfortunately, it's just the way it is, large. And the faculty have a hard time getting to know each and every student. When the average size of some classes is 80 students, I mean, it's just huge. And some of the big lecture ones are, you know, 200-300 with TAs, but that's not the same as those just graduate students a few years older than you are. That's not the same as having the professor there. So it just increasingly reiterates the importance of what your parents have always told you, which is, if you don't understand, ask the professor.
Right.
Go see him. It always seems so hokey, but the bottom line is, you know, when there's smoke, there's fire. It's true. Because if you don't, they don't know, and they just shrug their shoulders. And also, when you want them to write letters for you afterwards, knowing you really lets them put a little personal stuff in the letter rather than, "Yes, Billy got a B+ average, and okay, goodbye," you know, and that is the weakest of praise, and they could just look at their grade point average and come to that same conclusion. So when the faculty get to know you,
it makes a difference.
It makes a difference. And sometimes you can, to be honest, you can tell that a student is just sort of not buttering up or whatever, but that's fine too, because every faculty understands that there's life after college, and that these students need letters, and so it's a very difficult thing. So I would encourage them to do that. You'd mentioned something else. We got a few minutes left here, and that is, if you're going to graduate. And I thought, if you're going to graduate, why the hell would I need to talk to my advisor anymore?
Sure, but there's processes that need to be done there too. If you're graduating, you've got to make sure you do your degree audit. The degree audit is the way the student knows that all the courses, all the T's are crossed and the I's are dotted and all of that. And so you definitely want to meet with your advisor, especially because even senior year, things can come up and, you know, schedules may have to change. And so you don't want to make a change and suddenly find out, oh, that course that I dropped because of work schedule was like so important that now I'm not going to graduate. So even your senior year, make sure you're talking to your advisor, talking to your faculty. That's also, I mean, it's actually in junior year, you want to start looking at working with some faculty if you're going to be looking for letters of recommendation, things like that, and get to know. And again, this is at all levels, get to know the faculty in your field of study. They're the resources that can tell you all kinds of great things like, how did I get here? Why did I, Absolutely. Why do I study this?
And the thing I often tell students is persist. That is, the faculty are busy. Mm-hmm. So they'll sort of, or they can, not blow you off, but be busy. Come back and knock again. That is, don't take one, they don't mean it one way or the other. They're just busy too. Persist, knock, 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 knock. And eventually, you will make a pest of yourself. I tell the graduate students that too. Be a pest, I'm busy. Pester me. And eventually that will come through. John, it's been great talking with you. I must say, I've learned a lot about the advising process. I hope folks out there have too. It turns out it's a much bigger part of an overall college degree experience than I realized. I mean, I thought mostly you say, well, you need to take Poli-Sci 101, and then you need to take Biology 675, and it was just sort of the mechanics of it, but the personal part, and particularly, again, in a large state university where you can get lost, A, and B, Arizona, with a lot of first-time students coming here, really an advisor is so important, and someone like you who's really good at it. And it is. Any last comments? We're down to a few seconds left. You want to say about advising? No,
thanks for having me. And it's more than scheduling. It's really sort of navigating the process, navigating the degree.
Yeah, navigating.
Finding
your way. I love it. All right, we're going to go out now. It's a little early, John, but I think it'll be fine. All right, Al Bergeson for Smart Talk. See you all next time.